It's a strange thing to me that the writer of the Acts of the Apostles now has suddenly arrived in Rome, and one would assume that things are really going to happen. He's been telling us about him appealing to Caesar. He's been telling us about all the things that are possibly going to happen in Rome. And yet we never hear a word from Luke about it. I wonder why. Some people think, and they possibly are thinking quite accurately, that Luke never had time to finish the book that he was writing. It may well be that Luke died a martyr's death before the Apostle Paul did. We just don't know. But what we do know is this: he never did get around to finishing what we would think would have been a natural conclusion to this book, the Acts of the Apostles. Be that as it may, let's look into these last few verses of this remarkable book, and let me share with you some things that I believe will kind of tie up the last part of the tremendous saga that we have here concerning the early days of the Church of Jesus Christ. Now, the Apostle Paul, when he wrote to the Roman Christians, recorded for us in Romans chapter 1, said these words. He said, "I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and the unwise. So as much as in me is, I am ready or eager to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God unto salvation and to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek." We know that the Apostle Paul was ready. We know he was eager. We know he was anxious to get to Rome and have a ministry there. Remember that he has said all along, and he insists on saying it all the way through his letter to the Romans, that his approach is to the Jew first and also to the non-Jews. And therefore it is no surprise to discover that when he arrives in Rome, he is primarily and initially concerned in meeting with the Jews in order that he might present to them the gospel of Jesus Christ. But he is also concerned that he might present the gospel of Jesus Christ to everybody in that vast city of Rome. Now, of course, he knew something of what he was letting himself in for. If there was one place where things presumably were going to be hot for him, it was possibly in Rome. Because Rome was not the most salubrious place that you had ever heard of in the days in which Paul was to arrive there. It took great courage for Paul to have a ministry in Rome. It took great courage because of the very situation of Rome itself. Within a circle of approximately 12 miles, built on the seven hills of ancient Rome, there were probably 2 million people living there. These 2 million people, that's twice the population of the greater Milwaukee area, in an area of 12 miles, these 2 million people were divided into the most remarkable social strata. 1 million of these people were slaves. 50% of the population of Rome at that time were slaves. The other million people was divided into approximately 25,000 people who are the aristocracy. There are about 700 senators, there are about 10,000 knights, and there are about 15,000 soldiers. Approximately 25,000 members of the aristocracy, and there were 975,000 people who are not slaves. They were just absolutely broke. They just didn't have a penny to their name. A tourist who has recorded for us what it was like to travel in Rome around about the time that Paul was there said that the streets of Rome were filled with two cries, two things that you could hear the 975,000, almost a million paupers saying at that time. This is what they cried. They cried, "Bread! Bread! Bread! Bread!" They were starving. And the other cry was, "To the circus! To the circus! To the circus!" They were crazy on the ball games. Isn't it an interesting thing to find a city that is populated by 1 million slaves, almost 1 million people starving, who are absolute paupers, who are absolutely crazy on the ball games, who are absolutely crazy to go to the stadium and to watch the gladiators in their bloody combat? Isn't it remarkable that here were people who had nothing to live for and who were filling their lives with utter abject emptiness? There was the small group of the aristocracy that was extremely wealthy. There was the vast crowd of 1 million slaves who had absolutely no rights whatsoever. And there were almost 1 million people who were cold, stony broke. It was a challenge for a ministry if ever there was a place. And Paul arrives there. Now, he hasn't arrived the way he expected to arrive in Rome. He has had the assurance from God that he'll get there. He's told God over and over again, I want to go to Rome. I want to preach the gospel in Rome. I'm eager to get the message out in Rome. It's the metropolis. It's the great center. It's the great social and cultural and political center of the world. I've got to get there. And God says, you'll get there, Paul. You'll get there, Paul. But you know, he arrives a sick man. He arrives there, a man who's literally chained with a chain between his ankles. He arrives there under a Roman guard. He arrives there in very, very difficult circumstances indeed. But you know, the beautiful thing about it is this, that even though he arrives in circumstances that are invidious, even though he arrives in circumstances that he would never have chosen, with a chronic disease, with chains on his ankles and on his wrists, under a Roman guard, he arrives in Rome and he says, oh God, thank you. You've given me the chance to hit this unbelievably needy city. And it takes courage to think like that. It doesn't surprise me at all to see at the end of verse 15 that it says, but when Paul saw the Christians, he thanked God and took courage, and deep down in his heart, he said, look out, Rome, here I come. I'm very impressed with the fact that he was able to have a vision for a city like this, see the immensity of the need, the appalling injustice on every hand, and yet deep in his heart, with everything stacked against him, take courage and say, God, give me the courage to be what you want me to be in this vast city, and thank you for bringing me here at this time. Because it wasn't only the population that was the problem in Rome at that time. Nero was on the throne. Now, of all the cruel dictators, of all the cruel Caesars, it's a little difficult to say who was the worst, but there's no doubt about it that Nero would be at the top of most people's lists. At the time when Paul arrived there, Nero was 25 years of age. But he was Caesar of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was over the hump. It was going downhill rapidly. It had fallen from its greatness. There was unbelievable corruption on every hand. Homosexuality was rampant. Violence was on every hand. Appalling disease. And it was just an unbelievable mess. And sitting on the throne was this weak, lascivious, cruel young man who was possibly one of these days going to unleash unbelievable persecution against the Christians. And we know from our history books that this is exactly what happened. We know that Nero was the one who purportedly played his fiddle while Rome burned, and then had the audacity to blame a little nucleus of Christians for burning down the city for which he himself was responsible. A cruel, weak, lascivious man. And it was to this man that Paul, 60 years of age, had appealed. The great apostle of the gospel of Jesus Christ has come to Rome, and he's going to stand there before this 25-year-old rascal, and he's going to put his case in his hands. I'm not surprising that it was necessary for Paul to take courage. I'm not surprised. It's only window falling in, nothing important. We're talking about going to Rome. It's a bit of a pain, I suppose. Thank you. Thank you. Would you explain it to your wife, please? She's looking a little confused. There was another thing that was going to necessitate some great courage on his part. You know, when you go to Rome now, one of the things you go to see is St. Peter's. St. Peter's, an architectural masterpiece. And then another place you go to see when you go to Rome is the Colosseum. These are the fantastic places that you get to see. There's nothing quite like St. Peter's. You could put a football field inside if you want to. There's nothing quite like the Colosseum. It is absolutely unbelievable. When Paul arrived in Rome, neither of those was built, of course. And the thing that was really there when Paul was there, the big deal that you saw was the temple devoted to pagan worship. It was the temple of Mars. It was a cruel, hideous place. And as Paul walks into Rome, a prisoner of the Roman authorities with chains on his wrists and chains on his hands, on his ankles, as he comes there, probably suffering from chronic malaria, because he has just come by barge through the Pontine marshes that were malaria-ridden, and many people think that the thorn in the flesh that he had was chronic malaria. And if that was the case, it was exacerbated by this appalling ride, this appalling journey through the marshes. As he comes through, he knows he's going to see Nero. He sees the immensity of the need on every hand, and there, staring him in the face, is the temple devoted to pagan worship, Mars. He's got something on his hand, but he takes courage. And he thanks God. And he says, God, I was eager to come to Rome, and I certainly wouldn't have chosen these circumstances, but you brought me, and here I am. And I thank you. Isn't it an exciting thing to really, honestly, genuinely believe that God is putting you where he wants you, that God has got something for you to do, and to look at the situation and take courage? Oh, I'm so convinced of this, that the Church of Jesus Christ is not populated in many instances by people who look at situations and take courage. Very, very often the Church of Jesus Christ is populated by people who look at situations and take fright. Very, very often we do not engage in a ministry for the very simple reason we dare not. Very, very often we do not take a look at the situation and thank God and say, oh God, I want to thank you for the unbelievable privilege of being your person in this place at this time. We don't say that. Very, very often we're totally swamped by the circumstance. We're totally overridden by the situation in which we find ourselves. And we draw into our shell and we never, ever get around to being what we're called to be. But Paul took courage. I want you to notice how he did it. If you read very carefully in verse 15, this is what it says. When the brethren heard of us, the brethren, of course, a little group of Christian believers in Rome, to whom Paul had already written his Roman epistle long before he'd ever had the opportunity of visiting the city. This little group, when they heard that Paul had arrived, came down to the place called Three Taverns, and when Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. Now, remember this. Paul was not Superman. Paul was not Super Preach. Paul was not Super Apostle. That wasn't him. We don't put him on his pedestal. This is one of the biggest cop-outs in contemporary Christianity, to put these men on pedestals where they do not belong. Oh, the Apostle Paul, there he was, the great man, the eloquent man, the fiery man, the courageous man. He didn't know fear. He didn't know depression. He didn't know any of the things that I know. And if only I was like him, maybe I could do something like him. You know, that is the biggest cop-out imaginable. It isn't true. He knew what it was to be frightened. If he wasn't frightened going into Rome, there was only one reason for it. He was nuts. If he wasn't frightened going to try and hit that city for Jesus Christ, the only thing that was wrong with him was that he just had no sensitivity. You know the old saying, where there's no sense, there's no feeling. It's true. Very, very often people who don't feel joy and don't feel fear and don't feel all the natural emotions that come from situations are people who are just out of it. They're just not in the situation at all. I want to tell you something. The Apostle Paul went into that situation and he was frightened. But he saw some Christians there and he took courage and he thanked God and he said, look out, Rome, here we come. One day God had a little word with Joshua. This is what he said to Joshua. Joshua, be thou strong and very courageous. Why did God tell him that? Oh, you say, because Joshua was one of these big, strong, courageous characters. No, God never wastes his breath. He doesn't go up to Joshua and say, Joshua, you are big and strong and courageous, therefore for be strong and big and courageous. That would be a waste of divine breath. God goes to Joshua and says, Joshua, you're weak, you're little, and you're chicken. Now then, instead of being little and weak and chicken, be big and strong and courageous. And then he says this, have not I commanded thee? And then this is what he said, behold, I will be with thee. What is it that changes a man who's chicken like Joshua into a courageous man who will lead the children of Israel into great victories? It is the consciousness of the knowledge of God being with him. David, oh, David was fantastic, except when he went into his depressions. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? Why art thou troubled within me? Over and over again in the Psalms, as we studied them months ago, you remember we looked in them and we saw that David was susceptible to all the terrible things that were happening to him. You name it, he did it. You name it, he'd experienced it. But you know what the Bible says? It says that David encouraged himself in the Lord. And to encourage is the same as taking courage. To be encouraged means to derive from God the unbelievable courage that you're going to have when, humanly speaking, you just don't have it. You're going to have a ministry? Be realistic. If you're going to be a witness, be realistic. If you're going to be what God calls you to be realistic. And to be realistic is to look at your situation, and if it's frightening, be frightened, and then take courage. As far as the Apostle Paul was concerned, it's very fascinating at this particular instance to notice that God didn't speak with a great clap of thunder, as he may any minute now by the look of the weather outside. The gift of prophecy has not departed. Forgot what I was talking about now. God did not speak in a strange sort of way. When God spoke to the Apostle Paul coming on the road to Rome, I want you to notice how he spoke to Paul. He spoke to him through a little group of believers. Do you know where it was that the Apostle Paul found the tremendous encouragement that he needed from the Lord? It was from a little group of believers in Rome who ministered unto him. Do you know why a lot of Christians aren't doing much today? It is because they are looking at their situation and backing off because they're chicken, but because the very simple reason, they are not deriving the tremendous encouragement that God can give them. And the reason they're not getting the encouragement that God can give them is they are not putting themselves in the place where the encouragement is to be found. It is to be found among God's people. It is to be found in God's Word. It is to be found through God's Spirit. Meet with God's people. Share with God's people. Come to grips with God's people. Open your heart to God's people. Let God's people open their hearts to you. And when you see them and hear them and touch them and experience them and know them, take courage. Because you see, one of the most magnificent things that can ever happen to a believer who's afraid is to find himself in the company of one who's had a similar experience and who has triumphed through the power of the living God and is able to share and minister to him. The Bible teaches us quite definitely, over and over again, that God looks for people to minister to each other. You think always in terms of the Apostle Paul marching into Rome to minister to Rome. Before the Apostle Paul can minister to Rome, some Roman Christians have got to minister to the Apostle Paul. He takes courage and starts his ministry. Let me ask you something. Would you say that you're deriving courage from the living God to engage in the ministry to which he's called you? I remember once being invited to go behind the Iron Curtain to preach. I'd never been behind the Iron Curtain. Well, yes, I had, just briefly, in Eastern Berlin. I went in there and had a quick look around and got out as quick as I could. I didn't like it very much. I was at that time a member of the staff of the torchbearers, and the torchbearers were blacklisted behind the Iron Curtain because we'd been used of God to lead some of the communist young leaders to Jesus Christ. They had our records there, and when I went behind the Iron Curtain, they took my passport and photographed it for their records, and I knew that they had my face there in their records. And so I was interested to go and much more interested to get out. But a year or two later, I was invited to go and preach in Poland. And I remember going to Poland, and I really didn't know what to expect because it was the most mysterious arrangement. They didn't tell me where I was to go. They said, don't bring any letters with you. They said, don't apply for a visa to preach. You won't get one. Come in as a tourist, and somebody will meet you at the airport. I remember flying into Warsaw Airport. It was the most unbelievable night. Warsaw is the most unbelievable place on a beautiful night. But on an unbelievable night in an unbelievable city, I stood in this unbelievable airport falling to pieces and waited for I knew not what. To go where I knew not. To do what I didn't know. And I stood there. And everybody who came towards me seemed to have a hat pulled right down over his ears and a coat turned up and to look straight ahead. I stood there and tried to memorize what time the flights left Warsaw. And I stood there 20 minutes. Absolutely nothing happened. I had nowhere to go. I had no contacts to make. I had no names. I had no addresses. I had no nothing. There in the middle of Poland behind the Iron Curtain to preach when I had no visa to preach. And suddenly, a voice said, Briscoe. And I can assure you that I am not normally prone to jump out of my skin. But I did. And standing behind me was another man with a leather coat and a hat pulled down. He said, Are you Briscoe? I said, Yes. And he took off his hat and he gave a great big grin and he reached out his hand and he said, Hey, it's great to have you here. Oh, he said, I'm sorry I'm late getting here. He said, Come on. He said, The believers are already meeting in the church. They want you to bring them a message immediately. And we jumped on a bus and it was packed with people. And he began to talk in a loud voice and he said, Isn't Jesus great? He says, Isn't it thrilling what God is doing? And I thought, He doesn't understand. We're behind the Iron Curtain and I tried to look as if I wasn't with him. And I said to him in the end, What's going on? He said, Keep talking about Jesus. He said, Many of these people will not admit they understand English, but they do. He said, Whenever I get in a public place, he said, I always have a conversation at the top of my voice with somebody about Jesus. He said, The people behind the Iron Curtain are hungry to hear the word. And you know what happened to me? Because of that believer, I took courage. I took courage. Are you denying yourself the privilege of having people minister to you? And as a result of that, are you failing to minister in the way that God has called you to? I tell you, to have a ministry in Rome takes courage, and it's available if you really want it. It also requires conviction. I want you to notice what Paul did. He gave himself 3 days off. That's very interesting. Verse 16, when we came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard, but Paul was allowed to dwell by himself with the soldier that kept him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, Paul's got his strategy worked out. He's got himself settled in, and he didn't sit around and say, Oh God, get rid of my chain. Oh God, get this soldier off my back. I hate sitting looking at him all the time. I don't like him. We're not compatible. How would you like it, being chained to a guard all the time and just having him sit and look at you? Paul didn't pray that. For 3 days, he figured out what was he going to do. And it wasn't very difficult for him because he had a certain principle. Remember the principle? To the Jew first and also to the Greek. Now he says, I've got to get to the synagogue. I have got to get to the little group of Jewish people in this city. I've got to go. And he tries every way he knows to get his guard to take him. Excuse me. Wouldn't you like to go for a walk?
No.
Could I go for a walk? No. Have you seen the synagogue?
No.
Wouldn't you like to visit the synagogue?
No.
He didn't get anywhere. And so he's finding now that his strategy works out beautifully. If he can't go to the synagogue, what does he do?
Forget it. I didn't want to go to the synagogue anyway. I didn't want to talk to those Jews anyway. Oh, God, that's great. I'm just glad you didn't open the door.
Do you ever find yourself in that situation? God's been telling you to do something, and you tried half-heartedly to do it, and it didn't work, and you said, Great.
I didn't want to go. Now I don't have to go. When I stand before God, I can say, I tried to. The door didn't open.
You know, God won't be terribly impressed with that. He will say, Listen, if you couldn't go to the synagogue, did you ever think in terms of getting the synagogue to come to you? That is another alternative. if Muhammad won't go to the mountain, bring the mountain to Muhammad. If the people won't come to church, take the church to the people. If the people won't do it the way you insist they've got to do it, the onus is on you to figure out a way that you can do it when they won't do it. If they won't take it one way, the onus is on you to find out another way. And here he takes the tremendous initiative and he gets in touch with them and he says, I really entreat you, my dear Jewish compatriots, I really beg of you, because I'm in chains and I'm in chains for the hope of Israel, please come and see me. And in no time at all, these characters are there. I want to tell you something. It takes conviction for a person in a situation where they are lacking the freedom that we take for granted. It takes real conviction for them to get done the things that some of us never do, with great advantages over these people. You ever read the story of Helen Keller? Helen Keller, the lady who was born with hardly any of the normal attributes that we take for granted, like sight and hearing. Have you ever realized that if ever there was a lady who had the opportunity to get bitter at God and say, God, why did you let this happen to me, if you're there? But she didn't. Did you ever realize that if ever there was a lady who had the opportunity to say, well, of course, I'm in such invidious, unfortunate circumstances that I can't do anything for anybody, everybody's going to have to do it for me, but she didn't. Do you know that that lady had a ministry that was absolutely unbelievable, and she is known literally throughout the world for the work that she has done for handicapped people, because she honestly, genuinely believed that she had a conviction born of God in her heart. She had to have a ministry, and when there's conviction, it will take initiative. It will not give in, it will not quit, it will have determination, and if you can't reach the people one way, you'll think of another way of doing it. You know, one of the sad commentaries on the Church of Jesus Christ today is this. That very, very often, we demonstrate our lack of spiritual conviction by the very absence of dynamic initiative.
Well, we've tried that, it doesn't work. We'll try something else. That won't work.
Instead of saying, there's got to be a way, there's got to be a way. God, you brought me here. God, you've got to reach these people. God, they're reachable. God, there's got to be a way. And the principle you've born in my heart is this, the Jew first and also the Greek. God, how do I get to these Jews? It took him exactly 3 whole days to do it. With chains and a guard under the Roman authorities and probably suffering from malaria. It took him 3 days. It's an exciting thing to find yourself called to be a witness to Jesus Christ and to discover courage from him that will produce conviction that will drive you to do something. What have you done lately? What convictions have you shown recently? What initiatives have you taken recently? What evidence is there that you're really engaging in a ministry? You know, every single one of us who professes to be a believer needs to be answering these questions.